This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to be here. I'm a bit daunted by the fact that it's keynote address in very bold letters. I feel sure that somebody else is actually meant to be here, and I've just woken up in a parallel world today. I think that, you know, we've had a wide-ranging set of discussions this morning and a set of presentations as well. And we're very conscious of the fact that this is a time of change. And as such, I have no answers. All I can do is pose further questions and not flee to catch a plane or catch a train, but sit in the front row and leave my esteemed colleagues to debate afterwards. I'm unashamedly a product of the traditional HE humanities education. I savoured 3 hours contact time a week for 3 years and thought that was terribly excessive. Yes, hasn't the world changed? And when I was sitting down there this morning, I was reflecting quite a bit on some language in terms of, you know, everybody's going for the word excellent and they want to be seen to be a leader. Well, if everybody is excellent, what does that exactly mean? Because you can't have everybody being the best. So maybe you need to reevaluate your terms of reference. That's just the critic in me. In fact, the one thing John didn't say in my introduction there is I also am active as a music critic, so I get very hung up in terms of language a lot of the time and, you know, the use of words and all of that kind of thing. So forgive me if I get a bit pedantic about that. I'm not sure how many of you are aware of the JISC regional support centres and what we do. So I'll give a bit of an overview. It gives a slight introduction to the kind of angle that I'm coming from in delivering this. The map there shows that, you know, we have 13 regions. And across the 13 regions, we cover, you know, the four major post-16 sectors, FE, small HE, ACL and WBL. All having very strong representation and very strong support from us. And certainly the model that we've taken in London is to work on a cross-sectoral arrangement. So although my emphasis is on higher education and HE and FE, I will support institutions working with my colleagues that look at the other sectors as appropriate to the institutional need. I think that's important to bear out there. So, and I forgot the specialist colleges, of which we have two. But we work at a senior level, senior management level, on a relationship scheme, informed by the strategic drivers. Now, if you can... It's like hitting a moving target these days, isn't it? If you can pin down the strategic drivers quickly enough, you're doing very well these days. But what we all do bring to the situation is our own experience and knowledge of having worked in the sectors that we support. So it's quite key, I think, that we bring to the world, the work that we do, an ethos of change management, helping institutions to change their model and their business, but underlining that with some value. Regional advice, strategies, impartial. We're not going in there selling things to people. We do remain outside of that fray. Responsive to your aspiring and arising needs, and focusing on issues. Another thing that I would bring out, though, is the crucial role that we play in terms of brokerage between institutions, and I'll come back and touch on that later. And of course, it seems to get left as the last thing, but maybe it should actually be one of the first things that we have as why we exist and what we bring to institutions. So, a few minutes ago I said that maybe somebody else should be here. That somebody I expect, well, who would you like to see standing here instead of me? David Willetts, I presume, maybe. He's elsewhere, commenting on something else at the minute, different area of his remit. But, you know, I think what are the questions that we would like him to answer if he were here? And maybe that's what the panel discussion could deliberate on a bit further at the end. And also, what do you and your institutions, you know, feel are the things you need solutions to, or, you know, an ability to point the way forward to? Sorry, it's the after-lunch session, so of course you get a completely mad slide. I don't know. I told you, I'm a visual artist person, right? So I do things like this from time to time. Sorry. I deliberately didn't label it. It could be any number of things, couldn't it? I could talk about anything to this slide. In fact, I will. Like the explosion of higher education in this country and how it has changed. The nature of HE has changed. You know, the segmentation of it has evolved quite rapidly. I mean, when I was at university, I remember all lectures being cancelled one afternoon while the university professor of the department got out the department port and raised a wake to the death of HE when Margaret Thatcher, turned all of the polytechnics into higher education institutions. So, an interesting situation. And, you know, the landscape that we're in, and it's now I look at it, it's quite interesting, actually, that this globalisation is almost like a map of London in many ways, at least visually. But it, in fact, represents an international representation of the connectedness of higher education institutions on the internet, the top 200 institutions in the world ranking. But, you know, what we have now is a tiered system ever more than we did before. And the tiers are changing, and the pressures on the tiers are evolving and changing a lot. And this creates a range of different issues and different things that we will all need to respond to. And I think the way to do this is not to have just a single solution, but almost to have an institution-by-institution response. The factors, right. This stuff has been mentioned before, obviously. The fees argument, you know, do you charge the basic level? Do you charge the upper level? What's the advantage for you in doing one or the other? What's the perceived benefit and what's the actual benefit? I'm meant to be looking to the future here for HE and HE and FE. And actually, I was wondering, so there is a cap for HE. There is a level that HE and FE will set their fees at. But what will happen come the day, because it will happen, when HE's upper level is raised? Where will that 9,000 go to? Where will it stop? Will it stop? Will it just be removed entirely and there will be an open playing field? These are questions that I think every institution will need to have a response to when the time comes. But being in a position to have that response at the appropriate time means that, you know, at least at the back of the mind, you need to have that question there to begin with. News story from a couple of days ago. Universities in Wales setting their fees lower than England. Should English places be worried about that? Or is this just a headline that is making news out of something that, that doesn't excessively concern us right now. Then there's the private and independent HE provision. Yes, it's been seen by some as a potential boom time. BPP University College, edXcel, they're moving into this arena stronger than ever. In terms of exploring new disciplines, adding to their portfolios, diversifying their range of offer. And how does the rest of the higher education and HE and FE sector respond to that? Of course, in London, one of the things that we see here in London, rather than out in the region so much, is the number of overseas HEs having a presence. They have their own fee position to take. One American-style university I taught for a number of years ago charges fees of $10,000 a year. So they on surface, look fairly expensive compared to even the Imperial College position that has recently been outlined. But what isn't so widely publicised is the fact that that institution halves those fees for home UK students. That information is out in the public domain, and it is available on the internet, but you do have to look for it unless you are aware of the situation. So, it's a four-year degree program, but at fees of $5,000 a year, and they're coming out with a degree that's co-validated in the UK and in the US, it begins to look quite a good proposition to potential students. And of course, one of the things we have yet to see really is exactly how much of a chunk of the overall HE world, the private sector, private universities will in fact inhabit. But I think the point that was made earlier is the fact that the private sector and the publicly funded HE and HE and FE worlds actually do have to co-inhabit and do have to work alongside one another in a collaborative sense. But then you get a government that has spent quite a bit of time actually knocking the previous government in terms of having quotas for things, instigating a quota. An interesting situation. So what would the quotas mean? What do the numbers mean? This is partially, I think, one of the things that was alluded to earlier, with the government actually having to be in a position of finding new sticks and new levers to get some movement in the system, to hopefully try and encourage HE world along the vision that they have, that is forming in their mind. It's an interesting situation. When Vince Cable says that a government watchdog needs to focus more sharply on institutions that have struggled to increase the places they're giving to working class candidates, that does mean a refocusing of attention and actually having to take some action there. Although, probably quite a few institutions have yet to really grasp the reality of that. And then there's the longer term things of moves like this. Some aspects of the educational system are going to have effects that are not immediately apparent. So if courses that are funded to increase the aspirations and to encourage people to engage with the educational system full stop are cut or underfunded, what does that do to the longer term impact of our student numbers? Yes, it's undeniable, I think, that universities do, and HE and FE also do, contribute to social change. But, you know, you can't lay it solely at their door. It's quite an interesting image, I think, that one. I mean, I always come back to the image that accompanies the text. You know, are we looking at the bridge over the road or the road underneath it when we're talking about social change and, you know, how educational system is actually going to try and engineer that that change as well. It is very much a kind of situation of landscape that is in a permanent state of flux, but we do need to plan or try and plan for a situation that is going to deliver some sense of stability when the unknowns that we have, and they seem to be everywhere, are known at some stage in the future. The one thing you can't do is that. That poster seems to be everywhere these days. I walked into my local coffee shop going to the train station this morning, and there was a little card with it on up behind the counter, and I was merrily being served my coffee by somebody who's got an MPhil in philosophy. So then I reflect on the fact that some academics I have talked to recently said, oh, it can't be as bad as all that, can it really, out there in the real world? And one place I was at recently visiting on an institutional visit said, you know, we are the world's preeminent authority in this discipline. We will definitely continue. No, the world of larger HE is going to have to refocus and change and adapt just as much, I think, as HE in FE is. Why? Why for both of the sectors, really? It's student choice and the alternatives. Yes, there's the costs issue. There's the alternatives of apprenticeships and actually doing courses where people come out with a job at the end of it. You know, coming back to the whole argument of gold standard and London universities and HE and FE around London having to be seen to be part of the premium, of the elite. But, you know, actually, that's probably just rather too simplistic a view of things. One of the things that perhaps we need to look at is simplicity rather than complexity. And, you know, this is a whole set of boxes from a little while ago, but actually, are there too many boxes? Do we need to rethink? Well, actually, do we need to think outside of the box and to actually put our preconceptions to one side and to redraw all of the things we thought we knew about the way HE and FE landscape actually is situated now? Yes, there is confusion. How does a potential student deal with this, or, you know, deal with the pathways through the educational system and succeed and come through at the end of it as a successful graduate? And actually, how do we as an educational system deal with the spiky profiles of the students that don't have a straightforward linear path through the educational world? Where does their advice come from? What's the rationale they've got for doing what they're doing? And that a diagram like that and a set of issues and boxes like that poses, I think, a severe challenge to anybody facing the future of, HE and FE as well. You know, where do they fit into that? What do they see their profile as being? And how do they, say, make it clear to potential students that actually, yes, you can progress to us from this route and from us onto something else in the future? That's a significant challenge, I think. Okay, so we're all agreed, I think, that there are opportunities out there to be grasped for HE in FE. I said earlier that I think it's very much a case of individual responses by colleges. And those responses will be governed by your own strategic direction and your own set of drivers from on high and from outside of your institution. But I think what we do need is some thorough, holistic planning across your institution and some reflection upon not only where you are at the minute, but actually where you want to go. And thinking in terms of the collaboration and the possibilities of partnership and so forth that we've mentioned already, but will be discussed later on in the panel session and the workshops afterwards. You know, those are things that we'll need to have your own specific and tailored answer to. I think this is a good opportunity to take the time to ask the questions of yourself, to look inwards, but also to listen to your students and hear what they've got to say. And balance all of the high-level aspirations and all of the student wishes with some practicality and some operability. And there has to be, I think, some cold, hard level of efficiency that comes into the way institutions operate in the future. So from the RSC London perspective, certainly what we've seen on the ground is talk, if not actual work, towards mergers or collaborations or takeovers of one kind or another. That's doing away with an inefficient old model or relationships between institutions. Taking a coherent systems approach towards things, which I'll talk about in a minute, some more. Looking at the mutual breeding of benefits between HE as large HEs and the FE colleges in terms of the partnerships. The reasons we've touched on already. Do you work in geographic proximity, or do you not? I mean, one of the large FE colleges in London is exploiting a relationship with an HE that's in the northwest of England. And that's an issue, that's an arrangement that will bring issues for them, not only for the way they function managerially, but also how they will benefit as both institutions. And how do the students of the FE college benefit from that HE institution that they're so far physically removed from? To what extent should you just play to your discipline strengths and your discipline synergies and seek to explore the natural collaborations that you could have along those lines? Those are things I think a lot of places will need to focus more on, is identifying their areas of strength and working on those. And it could well mean that some other things are left to the side because of that. And other top-level factors, it sounds wonderfully vague. Well, that's because it is. Yes, other management issues, other strategic things that have yet to come along that we don't know about, that will focus and refocus what we do. And working quite, wouldn't say in the short term, so it's a set of knee-jerk reactions to things, but, you know, in a medium-term sense, so that, you know, further change and further, slight changes in direction can be accommodated and can be worked on as time passes. So, technology, a solution, not a problem. If you were to ask an IT manager, to change a system, to change a way of working, they'd probably go, yeah, you could, but because, you know, there are a whole host of reasons. I don't know why, but security seems to be the thing that an IT manager most often brings up as the reason not to change something. You know, we've got it working the way it is. The institution is perfectly safe, and it's working. So why change it? Well, I think in actual fact, what we need to do here is to take a different approach. You know, just because an institution has been doing things one way does not necessarily mean that it cannot do things more efficiently and with a better focus in another way. And using technology could be an opportunity to do that. So to change the models that you're working with in your institution and, refocusing the curriculum, moving outside of your existing area of expertise, your existing practice into maybe other areas as well. So one of the other things I would add to that is something on the discussion that was had earlier about shared services. And that is obviously a whole area that can be also mentioned in terms of a technological arena. You know, I think there are lessons that could be learnt potentially from the adult and community learning sector and how they quite often work very closely with local authorities to deliver their technology infrastructure. You know, and one of the reasons they do that is because it's more cost efficient. And if they're more cost efficient in that area, I know, they can deliver more with the money they've got in other areas of their business. IT outsourcing, e-learning, collaboration, those kinds of things are things that we see quite a lot of across FE colleges and also in the wider HE sector as well. But, you know, is the one question I would pose here is actually, is there any parity of experience between the FE delivery of an FE college online and the HE delivery of an FE college online? And if not, why not? And we can think about that more in a few seconds. Just to throw in another diagram there very quickly before I draw it to a close, really. I think one of the whole things is that you can think about a systems approach in terms of your business systems underneath having to underpin and support both aspects of what an FE college has to do these days. And I'll leave it for you to decide whether the FE delivery is the blue square or the red square or vice versa. But what we see, and this is a systems diagram, but educationally there's a map as well, is there should be some cross-referencing and some discussion and some interface between the two and the underneath as well, so that actually what we're left with in the end is a stronger, more coherent, and richer and actually potentially more agile and more student-focused system in the end. I think I'm going to leave it there, actually, because I've covered enough ground and leave it for the panel discussion.